I've got pockets full of silver. Yeah, I've got pockets full of gold. I can buy anything I want. Well, anything at all. I can buy me a life. Well, I can buy me a soul. You see, there's nothing I can buy that my pockets can't hold. Well, I'll buy me some family, then I'll buy me some friends. I'll buy everything I see, and then I'll buy it all again. Well, I'll buy me some peace, and I'll buy happiness too. But no, I'll never buy sadness. I'll leave that all for you. Well, I'll buy me some warmth so I never get cold. And then I'll buy me some youth so I never get old. And I'll buy me some hair so I never go bald. And then I'll buy me some truth so that I never get told. And I'll buy me some health so I never get sick. And then I'll buy cigarettes just to say that I. And I'll buy me a voice, and I'll preach through the dawn. And then I'll buy me some rights so that I'll never be wrong. I'll buy the ocean, the land, and the air that you breathe. And then everywhere you go, I'll place taxes and decrees. And I'll buy myself laughter as I collect on my dues. Well, then I'll laugh as you struggle to pay to be you. I'll buy guns and bombs and planes and things. Well, I'll buy me a war. And then I'll buy me some disease. And I'll melt all my gold. And I'll rename it oil. Well, then I'll spill it all over and watch everything spoil. One thing I bought, yeah, that brings me concern. It's the ability to think and the ability to learn. Well, 'cause knowledge is power, and well, power, that's for me. Well, you can buy yourself freedom, but you can never be free. 'Cause I've got pockets full of silver, yeah, I've got pockets full of gold. I can buy anything I want. Well, anything at all. I can buy your life just upon your soul. You see, there's nothing I can buy that my pockets can hold.
Hello, and welcome to What Would Save the World. My name is Tuke Edelo, and this is my Radio Free Brooklyn show. And that was Josh Garcia you just heard. Josh Garcia is an amazing musician, and some of the background parts on there were my good friend Mike Malazzo. And I want that to be like my fucking theme song. I love that song so much. That is like some activist-y, like, amazingness, like, buy oil. Like, I love that. And it's got, like, all, like, the fucking, like, folky, like, phrasing, like, drama. It's amazing. I'm so fucking into it. It's, like, it thrills me. It thrills me, Josh Garcia, if you're listening. It's amazing. I would make it my theme song, but I got to share it. But I got, you know, I got to get another a bunch of other people on here. So what I'm probably going to do is eventually ask Josh Garcia if I can, like, edit that and make it part of, like, a montage for the beginning and be like, what would save the world? My oil. Like, it's going to be, like, so much fun. So if you listened last week, you know, that was a really depressing, like, personal episode. But I think it was, like, a really important thing to discuss if I, you know, want to toot my own clit. Or I don't even know. That doesn't make sense. Toot my own horn. I don't know. I feel like I'd like to change all the phrases because that even might remotely sound like a dick because there's so much dick-centricity. And I feel like someone's probably listening to this right now like, oh my god, this is such fucking Bushwick bullshit. Like, what the fuck? Okay, anyway, so I'm going to move on. We have Megan Bandel. So she's my coworker. She's a really, really rad lady. She talks, she's very open about, like, mental illness and mental health, so I'm really happy to have her on here. I feel like this is kind of, like, continuation of my last episode to, like, they kept, like, talking about how, like, abusers are mentally ill and they push their like, abuse on other mentally ill people where it can abuse can cause people to become mentally ill. It's just so fucking complicated. So I really think in terms of saving the world or changing the world and making it a healthier place, we really need to talk about these issues. So, Megan, why don't you say hi and, like, introduce yourself? Who's making her crack up?
Hey, I'm Megan Bandelt.
Move closer to the mic.
Okay. Yeah. Jeez. So, I'm Megan Bandelt. I'm a theater maker. I do a lot of things. Currently, I have a show called Garbage. Going to Port Fringe Theater Festival next frickin' week with it. Scared shitless, but it's going to be a great time. It details ages 13 through about, like, 25 of my life and how mental illness and abuse has affected me. Yeah.
So, like, what do you think are, like, some of the most important things to talk about in terms of mental health? Because I know that we as a society don't really talk about it in a way that's super healthy in my personal opinion and experience, I feel like there's a lot of invalidation of mental mm-hmm. illness being a very real thing that people struggle with. So do you have any thoughts on that?
I have a lot of thoughts.
Yeah, just let them rip.
All right. So, for example, the first time that I wanted to kill myself, I was 7 years old. I'm really open about this shit, people, so get fucking ready. Yeah. I was 7, and I wanted to kill myself, and I told my mother because, like, I don't know, you shouldn't have those thoughts at 7. I was scared. And she told me, if you kill yourself, you'll go to hell. Do you want that? And I was just kind of like...
That's insane.
Yeah, and I love my moms, don't get me wrong, but, like... that was, like, a really, really big red flag for me. I was like, well, I'm feeling this way. There's something wrong, but yet this Catholic religion is setting this wall between me and getting help.
Yeah, I actually feel like a lot of the biggest problems that I see in society, a lot mm-hmm. of things where certain kinds of people are rejected, like with homosexuality and mental illness, I think a lot of this comes back to Judaic religion or, like, right. Christian Judeo, whatever you call that, like, this, like, very high expectations for what a person has to be.
Oh my gosh, such high expectations. I think religion did cause quite an issue for me and my family when it comes even now to treating mental health. My mother's gotten better with it. My father, he's... should I just start launching into...
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Talk about everything.
So, I love my dad, just want to put that out here, but my father is a recovering addict. He also has bipolar disorder like me. runs in the family, that shit's genetic, man. He abused the fuck out of me when I was a kid emotionally. And it sucked. It sucked a lot because when you're younger, you're afraid. This person who's supposed to be taking care of you, and he's not... And he's abusing you instead. When you're hiding in a closet from someone, you know that's a fucking issue.
And was that, like, super confusing as a child to, like, not be able to, maybe not understand that that isn't care? Or do you think you knew the whole time?
So I learned what alcoholism was when I was 8 years old, when my mom and I started going to Al-Anon and Alateen. So I always knew...
What is Al-Anon and Alateen?
So Al-Anon and Alateen, those are for the... what the fuck is the word? The spouses and the children of alcoholics who would go to AA.
Oh, okay. I want to say real quick. I'm going to post the links to that on my on Facebook/ What Would Save the World. You can follow. I'm going to be live updating things. So you can see things that are relevant. I'm going to post that on there in case anybody needs something like that. Okay,
awesome.
Keep going.
So something that they teach you is the three C's. Can't cure it. Didn't cause it. Fuck, what's the last one, man? I forgot. Oh, well. She has the links for it. But with those three C's, I always kind of kept that in me to understand that it's not my fucking fault, because when you're abused, you start to think that it's my fault. It's my fault that my dad's drinking. It's my fault that my abuser, any type of abuse, whether it be substance, whether it be domestic, etc., you start to think that it's your fucking fault when it really isn't your fault. And that's very difficult to comprehend.
Yeah, I know. I think you told me you listened last week, and that was actually a big thing that was a struggle for me to talk about, that is because there's always this, like, was it real or was it just all me?
Right.
Was I making it up? Especially when you do find out that you have, like, something going on, like when I found out that I had, you know, serious depression and, like, some, like, borderline tendencies and stuff, and you realize that you actually are, like, what other people would call crazy. Like, yeah.
Fuck that shit.
When you find that out, you know, you realize that, like, you start to doubt your own perspective. And
right.
That's, like, a lot of what my version of abuse was. Like, when I was abused, I didn't really understand. I stopped trusting my ability to judge situations effectively or realistically.
Right. Everything just becomes very skewed. You sometimes lose perspective of what, if you're actually living or if you're not. And I've certainly had those moments of where I don't know if I'm alive or if I'm in a dream and I'm dead. And a lot of that happened when I was a teenager. I didn't realize that I was actually still alive. It was really, really dark, horrible shit. And, I mean, that was like 10 years ago. What the fuck was 10 years ago? 2006. So 2006, I was diagnosed with clinical depression, social anxiety disorder, an obsessive compulsive disorder. When I was 13, I had a meltdown at school, and I was fairly popular. I was a jock. I was in the drama club. I played basketball. So I was fairly popular, and my popularity waned as my mental illness grew worse, and my mental illness grew worse as my father became more abusive. Now, at this time, it's important to keep in mind that he was not diagnosed with bipolar disorder. He was not being treated for bipolar disorder. He did not have any health insurance at this time to help him with treatment.
Do you think he was aware that he had a problem?
My father has tried, and this goes towards, so much of my father's side of the family. They know that they're alcoholics. They know that they're substance abusers. And when I say that they know, I mean that literally every one of my uncles and aunts, all seven of them on my father's side, are all substance abusers.
Do you think that, substance abuse, it happens a lot with people who are mentally ill.
Absolutely.
Like, because I think there's a lot of self-medication that goes on. And I actually, I had a really crazy experience actually yesterday. So I'm on a Wellbutrin, a very low dosage. It works for me typically. Like, honestly, like, I'm going to explain to you, like, how I know that it's, like, working in some way. Because last night, sometimes I don't take, I forget to take it till later in the day. But my body is, like, accustomed to that now. Like, that's normal. That's what I do. But I left it uptown at my friend's. And I didn't take it until, like, 8. And, like, or I didn't have it. And I thought I could just go get it and take it at night. And it would just be fine. But, like, it was not fine. Because, like, the slightest little thing happened with my roommates. And I just, like, I hadn't felt that sad in a really long time. Like, since I'd been to the psych ward. I was in the psych ward in February, I think. I told you about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's when I got on meds, and I just was like, whoa, like, I can't believe how much I need these medications.
Right, you sometimes just don't know. I know, Wellbutrin, that was one of the many fucking drugs that my psychiatrist put me on. I think Wellbutrin actually worked for me for some point, like, 3 months, and then it stopped working. But, over-medication is also a thing. At one point, I was on 9 psychiatric medications.
Oh, my God. That's ridiculous.
9 9 people. It was awful. And at that point, I pretty much had stopped responding to any treatment. I was 17 years old, and they told me to go on lithium. Now, for people who don't know what lithium is, think One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where they're just walking around like zombies. That's what lithium does to people.
I've heard that like fries your brain.
Yes. And my mother, she worked in a psychiatric ward, and she freaked out when they were like, we're going to put you on this. She was like, fuck no. And they're like, well, you either do that, you go away for 6 months, or you get a second opinion. My mom was like, fuck you guys, we're getting a second opinion. So we did that. I didn't go on lithium. In fact, they diagnosed me with ADHD, and I went on Ritalin, and the next morning I woke up at 7 a.m., which I hadn't done in years. I ate breakfast, I made my fucking bed, and I went off to school with a smile. And then I started to become better.
So you actually think you have ADHD, and that's a big part of it.
This is the fucked up part. So I started to show signs at 5 years old of ADHD. Now, I know there's this whole thing with, you know, all these kids like, oh, every kid has ADHD now, blah, blah, blah. My mother had mentioned to my teachers, you know, she's a little hyperactive. And they're like, oh, she's fine, she's fine. My mom was like, I don't know about that. So when this psychiatrist diagnosed me at 17, my mother broke down crying because she said, you know, I tried helping you. We could have avoided this. In my opinion, we couldn't have avoided it. Genetics are a bitch. I was in an abusive environment, so there was really nothing to stop this from happening, in my opinion.
Do you think that, like, you would have had this anyway had it not been for the upbringing? Do you think it was actually, like, a genetic thing, or do you think...
Yes. I think it's genetic. My father, bipolar disorder, my great aunt, she... So my family is Cajun Spanish from down south. So, like, really dramatic, and they sweep everything under the rug. My great aunt, she took pills for her nerves, but they were actually, like... for mood swings, and anytime anybody tries talking about how she had mood swings, everybody gets angry and stops talking. So,
that's crazy, that lack of, like, wanting to discuss it.
Yes.
Also, something I want to bring it back to is, you know, we're talking about how, like, a lot of this stuff might come from, like, religion, but, like, a lot of the, like, inability to talk about mental illness. Do you think, I was just thinking about, like, how it might be, like, oh, the devil's in you. Like, oh, you're a demon because you can't function. You ever think of that?
That, you know what, that's one of the many fucking stupid things that I was told. I believe in one of my dad's drunken rages when I was, like, 14, 15. He was like, you need Jesus. And I was like, nah, chill with that. I don't need Jesus. Like, and he was, like, going on and on and then blamed my mother. And it was all this crazy shit. So I do think that, you know, certain people with certain mental illnesses fixate on religion and become obsessed with it.
A really common one I see in, like, schizophrenia, and I don't want to say anybody's schizophrenic because I don't really know anything about that, but, like, a lot of the disassociative, like, sort of, like, ones, like, God complex type stuff, they get really into that, like, New Agey Eastern stuff. Like, that's really, like, I dated a guy who thought he was the reincarnation of Siddhartha Gautama, and, like, as much, like, that I was talking about last week, I think, like, that's a really, really, like, that's, like, a sick thing to think. Like, not, like, It must be in a lot of pain to, like, have to think that you're, like, God.
And do they even know they're thinking about that? Because they're so dissociated. It's very painful. I haven't had those moments. I haven't been on that spectrum of mental illness. But, you know, just reading a lot of things throughout the years and hearing people's stories.
Oh, I totally am on that spectrum. That's something that I don't think I'm diagnosed with. I have, like, I've been seeing weird creatures since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll, like, make up, like, creatures that exist and, like, think they're there for some period of time. Mm-hmm. But I know that they're not real, but, like, I still experience the fear from them. I don't really understand what the hell that is. But, I don't know. You were saying something else. Well, we could talk about so there's, like, you know, there's mental illness. We're talking about, like, the stigma, like the inability to, like, talk about it. Like, your family gets all angry about it. Like, how it's not really seen as, like, a legitimate sickness. Like, it's like there's a lot of like invalidation. Like, oh, that's not real. Like, it's all in your head. Why don't you just be happy? Specifically with depression. So, like, I want to talk about, like, how we can, like, undo that stigma as a society. Like, I want to know, like, first of all, I want to hear, like, your experiences of invalidation in that way. I know you were telling me about this the other day when we were hanging out.
Well, everything you just mentioned about, like, it's all in your head and all that shit, I have been told all that. First of all, I take issue with it's all in your head. What the fuck do you think it is? Do you think it's in my heart? Do you think it's in my stomach? Yeah, it's in my fucking head. So that drives me insane when people say that. But I was told all of that, especially about 10 years ago, when shit started to get worse for me. The thing with invisible illnesses, and I have celiac disease as well, which is an invisible illness, so I deal with all the, you don't really are allergic to gluten bullshit.
Well, but, you don't look sick.
Oh my gosh, you don't look sick. That's why it's so interesting, because so many people are very surprised when they find out I have bipolar disorder, or I suffer from depression, anxiety. They're like, you look fine. It's like, yeah, well, you know, it's not like it manifests itself physically. It's not like you look at somebody and go, oh, they have depression.
That's something I actually struggle with, because I actually think that a lot of people look at me and think I'm insane, think I'm crazier than I am, and I struggle with that a lot, because I do look really weird. Like, sometimes I'm, like, in smeared face paint, my hair is blue, sometimes I'm not, like, exactly the most clean, like, I forget to shower and stuff, like, and I do think that people think I'm way less reasonable than I am, and I definitely feel a lot of, like, what do you call that? Like, prejudice? Not. I don't know if prejudice is the right word.
Isolation?
Alienation, a little bit. Mm. But alienation, isolation. Like, I feel like a lot of people, like, will be nice to me, but it's almost like a pity thing, or they think that I'm, like, that's sort of, like, a weird thing. Like, I talk to a lot of people who, like, I feel like they're nice to me, but they don't, like, think that I can tell that they think that I'm crazy. Like, they don't think that I see it. And I've sort of, like, fetishized it, like, in a non-sexual way, where I'm like, ha ha, you don't see that I know that you think I'm crazy. This just means I can do whatever the hell I want.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I can, like, act crazy, and you'll just, like, excuse it. Like, I can say, like, ridiculous shit and get away with it. So I kind of love that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that I definitely, like, have, like, mental illness, which I sometimes, like, some aspects of it, I think that they're strengths, because I think some of the depression and some of the borderline is just, like, extra, extra, extra heightened sensitivity. Like, some of it...
Yes.
Some of it is, like, unhealthy patterns in relationships, which I've been getting over a lot. Like, you know, unhealthy, like, codependent patterns that I've been totally, like... I have the tendency to, like, go there in my head to be codependent, but now I, like, recognize it when I'm having that tendency and can step away and, like, deal with myself. So that's great. But, like... having that and having such intense emotions, which is really, like, borderline is sometimes called, I think it's called, like, intense, like, emotion disorders or something.
Really?
Or, like, something, what is it called? It's, like, called something like that. But it's, like, a highly emotional thing.
I mean, I can totally empathize with that. My emotions are so intense. I actually, I stay up sometimes. I mean, I'm a night owl anyway. But sometimes I'm up until 3 o'clock in the morning just because I have these surges of emotion. And they're not necessarily negative, but they're just so overwhelming that I have to work through them somehow.
Yeah, you know what? That's called them. Sometimes it's called borderline emotionally unstable personality disorder. I'm totally, like, emotionally unstable, but because there's such high emotions, I feel like it allows me the ability to understand, like, a wide range of other people's emotions.
Right.
I feel like a very high level of, like, the ability to, like, look at someone and how they're behaving, and someone will be like, oh, that's, like, a really annoying way they're behaving, and I'll be like, well, they're behaving this way because of this and this and that.
Yes.
And, like, I do, like, emotional math, I call it, where it's like I cannot relate to their experience, which is something that I don't like to be like, oh, I completely understand, because I think that's, like, sometimes I think that can sound condescending to if somebody's in the wrong mood, to be like, oh, I understand, like, I get you. It's like, no, you don't. You haven't lived my life experience. So I don't think I get people, like, so much, but I think that I can look at them, like, in what they're doing, and be able to, like, empathize,
like, with their patterns, their behavioral patterns, or something that they're doing, or you can, like, look at them and see that they're, like, fucking around with, like, the hem of a dress, or, like, they're kind of scratching themselves a little bit, or at least that's what I do to see if somebody's nervous, because they're, like, nervous tics that I have, so I can usually tell if somebody has, like, some type of anxiety issue when they're doing that.
Yeah. And I think that that's, like, a really important thing, actually, in terms of, like, breaking down the stigma. Because I keep wanting to, like, hashtag the shit of, like, everything I posted about this. But, like, break the stigma. Because the truth is, people who have mental illness, a lot of them are in a lot of pain and need help and need support. But I think that I feel like, historically, people who are mentally ill are, you know, treated as useless, like, locked up.
Yes.
Or, like, now it's becoming less and less, but there still are psych wards. There's a lot of separation type thing, especially because a lot of people who are in prison are mentally ill.
Yes.
And maybe didn't do anything that was, like, that terrible. It was, like, an instant of, like, you know, they couldn't get their meds because, for whatever reason, like, mm-hmm. the medical world was not helping them. So, you know, something happened and they got, you know, they got trapped and they got in a situation they maybe wouldn't have been in had they been provided their medication or provided a safer space.
Right.
So I just think that, like, the importance of acknowledging that people who have mental illness, even if it's severe, often have an extreme, like, amount to contribute. Like, when I was living on the on a commune, there was this guy there who has, like, schizophrenia or something. I don't really know what he has, but he was always in and out of the psych hospital or the mental hospital. I don't really know what the right word to call that.
Psychiatric ward is usually how I refer to it.
Psychiatric ward. Okay. Yeah. When I was in the I called it the psych ward when I was there too. But mm-hmm. I also like to call it the loony bin for my own like.
Yeah.
The loony bin.
You got it.
Yeah. But yeah, he was in and out of the psych ward because he was not dangerous at all, but he would just, like, wander off and, like, get in people's cars.
Yeah.
And, like, people would get really scared. And, like, I understand why they would. Like, if some guy got in my car while I was, like, kind of, like, pulled over a little bit, I would freak out.
Right.
And, but at the same time, he's one of the most amazing people ever. Like, even when he's like that, he, like, loves being around people. Like, he's so, like... I feel like he really brings people together. He's got a great energy. People love being around him. He's so funny. Like, he's so warm. Like, he has such an amazing heart contribution.
Right. Just because you have a mental illness, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person. And that's a great example of that. Because a lot of people think that just because you might be mentally ill, you might be having a spell, that means you're a bad person. And that took a really, really long time for me to understand about my father. Just because with the addiction aspect. So I love the guy, but lately I've been telling him, because his medication currently isn't working, he goes to the VA, so they really don't help anybody.
What's
anyway.
What's the VA?
The VA is Veterans Hospital. He was in the Air Force.
Oh, so he probably has PTSD too.
He wasn't active duty. He didn't serve overseas, but he does have PTSD from his childhood. Some shit hit the fan. That's another show, ladies and gentlemen, another show.
Oh, we should talk about PTSD a little bit, though, before the show
yes.
ends, because I think PTSD mm-hmm. is so prevalent, and people don't get it.
Oh,
like, you
my
know,
gosh.
People want to talk about, you know, the PC culture, and I understand, like, you should be able to say whatever the fuck you want, but that doesn't mean you don't have to deal with, like, the consequences of what you say. I'm a huge advocate for free speech. Like, say whatever the hell you want, but that doesn't mean I can't respond to it.
Right.
Like, if you say something, like, really insensitive about, like, sexual harassment or something, like... Mm. PTSD is real. I notice it in myself all the time. I have a very, very short, like, panic response because, like, my PTSD comes from, like, somebody trying to burn down a house. I had an arson thing happen. Mm-hmm. So, like, if I smell smoke, I start to, like, freak out. Like, things with fire. Like, I yelled at somebody for lighting a sparkler at this Memorial Day barbecue. He just lit mm-hmm. it a little bit, like, on the porch over a couch. And it could have been bad, but I was like, stop it. Put it out right now. Right now. Put it out.
Yeah.
And I was, like, screaming. And luckily, my aunt was there, and she was like... She's had a traumatic fire experience. You should tell them. You should tell them. And I sort of, like, glossed over it. But then I would just... Then the shame that comes with that.
Oh, my God.
I was, like,
shame.
Devastated. I was like, I can't believe I yelled at this kid. He's so nice.
The
I just met him.
Fucking guilt. I mean, PTSD, I was diagnosed with it when I was 18. I was seeing a therapist. I discovered in my freshman year of college that if you put me in a room with vodka and opened up the vodka and I smelt it, I would immediately... I don't even remember how it happened. I would start crying hysterically Aww. And vomiting because of all the vodka that my father used to hide in my room, too.
That's crazy. That's so fucked up.
So I went through some serious treatment for that. There was also an incident in February that I've been kind of suffering through slightly.
Oh, that thing.
Yeah.
You don't have to go there if you don't want to.
I mean, I was assaulted sexually in February. Don't really want to go too much into it. But the guilt and the shame, that's something that I really want to touch on because you start to really think it's your fault. Mm. It's your fucking fault. And I cried every week in therapy. I cried at work. I cried at home. I cried in the subway. And it's really awful. And now kind of looking back on it and able to kind of just step back, I'm just like, no, it's not my fucking fault. And the same goes with the PTSD that I had when I was 18 years old. That's not my fault.
I also want to clarify real quick, mm-hmm. for anybody who's like not super familiar with all these terms, PTSD is post-traumatic stress disorder.
Correct.
Yeah, I realized I did not say that. And, you know, you never know who's listening.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, yeah, the shame that comes with that, that's like one of the... I really want to talk about, like, what do you think that, like, people in our society today can do to be more supportive of people who have mental illness? Because I think so many people do have depression. It's very common, and I think, I mean, this is going to be, like, my little, like, political stuff. Like, I think that some of it does come from living in the kind of society we live in, where,
right.
like, there's a lot of, even though there is family and a lot of families take care of each other, there is this, like, large, like, sense I get of people are supposed to be, like, all for themselves. Like, you mm-hmm. know, one, you know, take care of yourself.
We're a very singular society.
Yeah, and, like, individualism, there's, like, I understand that it's, like, powerful to be, like, oh, well, I am who I am, and, like, that's mm-hmm. the way I am, and there's, like, nothing you can do about it, and this is what I'm going to do. And that's, like, one of the strengths that I can find in mental illness or mental, like, or I also like to call, like, unless it's affecting someone negatively mm-hmm. or putting themselves at a danger to anyone but them or themselves if they feel bad. But if, like, somebody's, like, manic and they're happy with it and they're surviving and they're okay, like, is there anything wrong with that? Like, neurodiversity.
I don't think, as a person who is manic, I don't think so, as long as they're taking care of themselves. I mean, after writing Garbage and kind of thinking back to it and reading it, I was like, oh, shit, I wrote this all at, like, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. Those are kind of my manic hours if I'm writing. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't think, as long as you're not hurting someone and you're not hurting yourself.
Yeah, if you're not eating, that counts as hurting yourself.
Yes.
Like, yeah, so if you're taking good care of yourself, then it's, like, okay. Like, a lot of these things are made to be a lot worse than they are, some of them.
Yeah, as long, I mean... If you're living with it, I've lived with this shit. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder when I was 16. I changed my diagnosis. Woohoo! So I've been living with it for 11 years. You start to realize the patterns and the feelings. I'm really in touch with my body, my emotional body, my physical body.
Yeah, I've gotten good at that too.
Yeah.
I feel it all in my stomach.
Yeah, so you can kind of tell when you're about to go into that swing or whatnot, and you can sort of learn to how to control it. It's very interesting. I can't quite put words to it.
So, yeah, so anybody who's listening, who's, you know, trying to, like, save themselves so they can save the world, oh, yeah, you need to be saved by, have you accepted yourself as your Lord, Lady, and Savior? Or Lord, Lady, or them, or whatever. Like, as your guiding light, have you accepted yourself as your Savior? Like, you can be your own mm-hmm. Savior. Like, you can take care of yourself, but you also can take care of yourself by asking a community to be caring for you.
Yes.
Like, I think that it's, like, you know, I think a lot of people feel like they can't advocate for themselves because mm-hmm. of the singular individualistic culture. Like, we feel like that we can't ask for help. It is okay to ask for help. Once I started asking for help and I started finding the right people to ask for help, I felt very validated, and things have gotten a lot better in my life because I realize I have people who understand that these are things that exist. Like, Megan's one of them. I've hit up Megan in my, like,
yes.
my episodes. Like, this... There are people around who can be supportive. So do you, like, what do you think, like, could be, like, what in an ideal world, how would people deal with mental illness or other people that have mental illness?
I think there's a lot of things. My first and foremost thing is that since I've been dealing with this, I've always fucking been open about it. I can say that, honestly, I have never given a shit about what anybody has thought about me for being mentally ill, because I did not do it to myself. I'm not responsible. I am, yes. You know what? Let me rephrase. I am responsible for my actions, of course. I hold myself accountable. I'm, like, really serious about that because of growing up in an environment where somebody didn't hold himself accountable. So I'm, like, very strict with that with myself. I have a lot of self-discipline. So I think that, oh, man. I'm, like, getting overwhelmed. It's just a lot.
Oh, it's cool.
What I've been doing, we could tie this into Garbage real quickly.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Art. There's a lot of things like art therapy, drama therapy, and whatnot. In an ideal world, I think that we need to be funding art in our public schools a little more.
I would say a lot more.
Yeah.
Actually, this is something that I've thought of. This maybe you like this. I've thought that it could be really useful to teach art in an, like, applicable way, like they're in terms of like art therapy, like yeah, like legit, like that. I actually think that there should be art therapy available. Way like it should be really available.
Yeah.
Like the just like the general concept that that art can heal. Like
yes.
That needs to be more established. Like that it's not just like a thing that you make money off of in the media. It's not just like entertainment. Like it can be used for therapeutic purposes. And also, I think that it could be cool to like blend like music and math,
yes.
and like blend like wood shop with geometry, like blend like maybe even you could blend dance with a lot of mathematic things. You could blend so many things, and I think I would have done a lot better in school if I had that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, in high school, I was anything artistic aside from fine arts, because I can't draw for shit. Anything artistic in high school, I was involved in, and that was my saving grace because I couldn't connect with anything else. I went to school for theater, my undergrad, and I did quite well with that. And in grad school now, I'm for theater history and criticism because I want to fucking kill myself, apparently. but to tie that in, actually, with art and mental illness and healing, my thesis is going to be dealing with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and Greek theater. And there's a lot of programs the military has been designing with theater makers to bring these programs to veterans who are dealing with PTSD, and they've been working, which is great.
That's amazing. I know
yeah.
that's a huge thing. Like, you see, like a lot of these homeless guys you see mm-hmm. on the street who are acting a little weird, talking to themselves, a lot of those guys are veterans with varying
yes.
levels of PTSD. Like, I think, like, it's, like, 1 out of 5 like veterans who go to war have PTSD
mm-hmm.
and like oh speaking of which, that's why I hope Bernie Sanders is winning today.
Yep.
Because he wants to take care of the veterans, and like I really think that I think that's like super important, because we're gonna send people to war and they're gonna go like watch their friends get killed and stuff, and like I said, like it's a chemical thing, like they're gonna have chemicals that get released faster than other people,
right?
Like it, like their stress chemicals get released so fast, and if anything like reminds you of it, like oh yeah, you were talking before about how when you smell alcohol,
mm-hmm.
when I smell smoke, I like sometimes will like run or like cry,
and rightfully so.
Yeah, I mean, there was, like, this time at my parents' house where there was a fire alarm going off, and, like, I heard it, and I thought it was my neighbor, and it was just, like, a little bit of smoke, and it turned out that my landlord had, like, something had fallen in his fireplace, and he put it out, and it was fine, but we called the fire department, and they, like, you know, they came and checked everything out, because they do that, you know, they look, if they get called, you know, if there's no fire anymore, they look at all the pipes and whatever,
mm-hmm.
they came up to my apartment, and I was just, like, sobbing, they're like, are you all right? I'm like, I just had a really bad fire in my life, like, I was hysterical. Like, so that's for, like, one instance in my life. Like, if somebody was at war and, like, they hear, like, a loud sound, like, that, like, a lot of that's a very real thing. And people are not aware of it. Like, that's the thing. Like, a lot of people are not aware of, like you were saying, like, it is an invisible illness. Like, people can't tell sometimes, like, that you have depression, or they can't tell
right.
that you have celiac. But sometimes I feel like you can kind of see, like, if someone's acting a certain way, like, they're not, like, like we were talking about, like they're not necessarily bad, or they're not like stupid, like they're sick, they need help.
Yeah, like there's certain things that happen. I mean, with depression for me, I really don't have them anymore, but the bags under my eyes used to reach like almost like where my nose begins.
Mm-hmm.
It was really bad. You can visibly look at me and know that I was a sick girl. So things like that, certainly you can tell. But outwardly, like, cancer, for example. I've lost tons of people to cancer. My father has cancer again for a second time because of his lifestyle before, which blows. But people go, oh, cancer, you know, a person gets chemo, they're bald. Person gets radiation, they might have lesions on them from it. It's like, oh, okay, so because it's physical, we can see it. Maybe that's how I look like inside, because I'm in pain from depression.
Yeah, I would have to. I have to agree with that, like, wholeheartedly, because I think that's another thing, like, with abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, physical abuse is obviously, it's, like, a different thing.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of people talk about, I mean, it also is often combined with emotional abuse, but a lot
yes.
of people want to talk about how emotional abuse is not that legit. But that's, like, a thing that I hear a lot. Like, even somebody I was dating was one time like, oh, it's just not as bad. It's just not as bad. I'm like,
fuck that.
How could you even, like, really compare that? Like, it's, like, a different thing. It's just, like, I don't know. Like, and that's, in some way, it's traumatic in a different way.
It is.
It's just different. Like, it's not more or less. Like,
yeah, it's, it's not necessarily either, oh, physical abuse, you know, the bruises might disappear, the cuts might disappear, and emotional just kind of stays with you.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that people who have physical abuse, like, most people who would it happen to would likely have some amount of PTSD and, like, emotional stress, too. I mean, I just think that, like, abuse is, like, so rampant. Like, how much of a... Do you think we live in, like, an abusive culture?
I think so. I think we live in a very abusive culture.
Do you think this, like, contributes to the, like, how many people could be, like, categorized as mentally ill? And I'm also cautious about, like, categorizing people who don't feel like they're mentally ill as mentally ill.
Right.
But there still are a lot of people who are... They're, like, a lot of people who are on, like, medication for psychological things.
Yeah.
Like, do you think that that would be lessened if we lived in a less abusive culture?
That's hard to say. Part of me wants to say yes, because I'm an optimist. I'm just like, yes, that would be great. But at the same time, so many things are genetic that even though people might live... I know people who... I've helped a lot of people who have had mental illness throughout the years, and I'm really thankful that I've been able to talk people out of suicide and whatnot, because nobody needs to deal with that shit. I've known people that have perfectly normal-seeming lives. They're... Home life is stable, you know, they're doing well, and then all of a sudden one day something just happens in their brain and then they're not okay, and then they have an anxiety disorder, they have depression, they have bipolar disorder. It's one of those things that you can't fucking fight genetics, and you can have an argument all day with some people who are just like, it's all in your head, but your genetics fucking determine shit. You can do everything you want. Sometimes you just can't fight it.
I mean, so something that I think about a lot is, like, how can, like, you know, there's so many levels of support. So, you know, this person that I was talking about before, mm-hmm. on the commune, like, we really tried to help him. Like, he had a team there, and we were trying to get him, you know, some help and whatever, but we were not really qualified to do that. Like,
yeah.
I was trying to get him to go to, I don't know, what's one of those, Region 6? Or is that... housing. I don't know. There's some kind of, like, region thing that, like, you can go and get psychiatric medication.
Is it like public health?
Yeah,
okay.
And we kept trying to go because we knew he was, you know, he was in the psych ward and he was put on, like, some antipsychotic that maybe wasn't the right medication for him. But, like, so I wanted to take him, but I was, like, I had taken responsibility to take care of him or, like, be one of the people. And it ended up really bad. We ended up having to get him, like, involuntarily committed because we didn't know what to do at that point because he was, like, not eating. He was, like, smoking cigarettes to the point where his fingers were turning black. And that's, like, major, major, like, schizophrenia, like, symptom. Like, you keep smoking cigarettes because it calms the symptoms a little bit. So we didn't know what to do. So, like, what do you think, like, is the balance there between helping someone, like, if you know, like, say, like, someone you know, you think that they're, like, at risk for suicide, or you think that they're behaving in a strange way, like, how do you reach out? How can you help? How can you be supportive and not overstep your qualifications or your abilities?
That's a great question, because if you overstep, it could become very dangerous.
Yeah, it could become dangerous and like, worse for that person also,
yeah.
The person you're trying to help.
You have to test out that situation. You can try and respond. I mean, if I know one of my friends is having an issue like that, I will try and make myself available physically. Or if we have mutual friends, reach out to them and say, hey, so-and-so is heading down a bad path. I'm kind of afraid. We got to figure something out.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, that's, like, something I'm going to touch on that real quick.
Sure.
Something I think that it can be really powerful for anybody who's listening who has, like, problems with themselves or, like, thinks that they have, like, there's a chance that they'll start to feel helpless or, like, feel like they might, like, you know, feel suicidal. And people should maybe have a list of people that are, like, have, like, consented to being on their, like, emergency list.
Yes.
Like, have, like, a group of people, like, be a team.
Yeah, I think that's very important to do that. So if you're struggling with anxiety and depression and whatnot, you should do that. You should reach out to people and make that consented list just in case shit goes down. Going back to what I would do, I would certainly make myself as physically available as I could and maybe not straight out come and say, hey, you know, if you don't do this, you know what? Threatening is the worst thing you could possibly do to somebody that is going through a mental health episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst fucking thing you can do. And I've seen people do it, and it never ends well. So you want to make sure that you're not threatening the person. You want to make sure that you know that they know that you love them, you care for them. And if you just point out certain things, certain behaviors that are concerning, and if this is a pattern, you could say, hey, so the last time that you were picking up cigarettes off the street and you were smoking them, this happened, and I'm just checking in to make sure that, you know, you're feeling okay.
Yeah, and that's really important, too, because I feel like I'm letting people, or also just, like, if you see someone struggling, like, let them know, like, that you care, because sometimes I feel, when I'm, like, struggling, I feel like, oh, I'm, like, a burden. Like,
yes.
I can't
to
you. And more I've been finding I have people that I can go to. Even if they don't completely understand, they, like, are there. Like, last night, I called a couple of my friends just, like, sobbing on the street. And my friend was like, come on, just come hang out.
They care
like,
about you.
Yeah, like, just come. And they, like, got me French fries. And Yay. They just sat with me. It was very nice. So that, and then also, so we have about 15 more minutes,
sure.
And I want to know, do you want to read that piece from Garbage?
Yeah, sure. Why the fuck not?
So we're gonna have Megan read a little bit from her. It's a one-woman show, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I've been advertising it. I'll make sure. So, yeah, you want to say, how long do you think the piece is about?
Oh, goodness, probably about a minute I'm going to do.
Oh, okay, cool.
Maybe less. This is from the middle of the show. It's poetry, and it's actually pretty positive. Since we've been talking about some heavy topics, I'd like to throw in something light.
Yeah, yeah, of course, because I feel like people can become really empowered through their mental illness, like find their own sense of like strength and community.
Absolutely.
At least that's what I found.
That's me too. Okay. The things that make me whole again, but gee, that whole is grand. Feeling the spine of an old book. Muddy feet splashing through cold river water. The sterile smell of a clean hospital room. Lighting a stick of incense. A genuine smile. Crinkles by eyes while laughing. The breathy sigh after a first kiss. A spool of thread undone. An empty subway car so I can sing. The glow of lights up. First sip of hot milky tea in the morning. All net, no board. Moonlight through thick and sturdy branches. The quiet of falling snow. June sunshine, an embrace. Drunken laughter. Rain falling on my skin. Watching morning glories bloom. Counting eyelashes as a lover dreams. The first sight of your eyes.
I really love that. That's beautiful. So that's, I think that reminded me a lot of like some of the things that like when I'm like more manic or in some of like the more positive things, like
mm-hmm.
it reminded me of like that. I call it like the tastiest breath. Do you know what I'm talking
yeah.
about? Like that breath of like life of like why we're alive. And I feel like that's like a lot of the people I meet who would be considered mentally ill, like really understand that, like
yeah.
understand the passion. And like, I love the singing in the subway, so I can sing in the subway car, like that ability to like let life be magical. And that's
yeah.
actually like a part, a lot of why I'm like doing this show is because it's so abstract, like part of like who I am as like an activist or like what I am as like, I call myself as like a carer, like somebody who just really cares
yeah.
about, because I want everybody to have access to that and be able to be in a safe enough place where they can just like experience life to the fullest and like
right.
have that magic, have that sense of community, like have just like have the warmth a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like not everybody like gets to have that. I don't know. I feel
no.
like I sound like such a hippie right
no,
now.
No, but it's true. Not everybody gets to have that, and they should. They're entitled to that.
Yeah, like, I don't know, that song, Rainbow Connection, always makes me think of that. Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, they're only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it, but I know they're wrong, wait and see. One day we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. I just wanted to sing that real quick.
Snaps.
Yeah, I wanted to sing that part. Because I love the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Yeah. That always, like, gets me. Yeah, I think that that's, like, a fantastic thing. So I think that we could talk a little bit more about how we can help people who have this problem, or we could talk about... we can talk a little bit more about your show and where it's going to be. It's going to be the Port Fringe.
Yeah, Port Fringe Theater Festival in Portland, Maine. So if you got homies up there, let them know. It's going to be cool.
Do you know what days your show is going to be?
I do. I'm opening my first show on June 18th, which is next Saturday. The first one is at 10:30 p.m. The next one is a Tuesday, I believe. Actually, no, it's a Wednesday. That one's at 9 p.m. And then the last one, we get 3 days. Last one is the 24th, and it is at 5:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm. So I thought about, like, something else I want to talk about. I want to talk about, so I know this is something people talk about all the time. Do you think that people are, like, over-medicated?
Oh, my fucking God. Yes.
I know you said you were put on, like, a lot of meds, but also at the same time, like, I know some people, like, really need their medication.
Right, of course.
So, like, where do you think the balance lies there? Like, what do you think, like, can be done about that? Like, do you think that there's, like, a lot of preventable things that people could be... Okay, yeah.
I think that a lot of children are over-medicated, and I know some of you might be... saying, whoa, your mom wanted to put you on ADHD medication when you were 5. Some fucking kids need it. However, some of the medications that I was on over 10 years ago now have warnings that they should not be used on children. And these are antipsychotics. You should not fucking put a 14-year-old who is going through hormonal changes and their brain is still developing on these heavy drugs that sedate them. There are drugs that you should just not put fucking kids on. And so for a psychiatrist to put children on these drugs, and they fucking know what drugs they are. Yeah. Don't let them play you. They know what children should not be on. For them to put them on those drugs, that's fucking unacceptable.
Do you think, like, medication for, like, certain people should be, like, a last resort thing? Do you think, like, a lot of people could be more help with therapy? Or?
I think that, like, CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, I think that should be utilized first. I know for me, that was what was utilized first. I've been in therapy since I was 5 years old because my dad went to jail, an innocent man. So I've been in therapy and know a lot of fucking about it. I think therapy should always be utilized first. Mm-hmm. And then medication if the patient is not responding to therapy. Mm-hmm. I don't think therapy is used often. And of course, the thing that makes people not want to go to therapy is just because you're like, oh, this person takes my insurance, you go see them, it might not be a good fit. I've had dozens of fucking therapists, and they used to make me so angry because they weren't understanding how I felt and why I felt the way I did. So... that's a risk that you run into when you're seeking therapy. Mm-hmm. I think that should always be utilized before medication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that too. Yeah, I think that. So we're gonna. Megan, this has been incredible. I'm really happy you came on the show. I think that this is, like, a super important discussion to have, and I don't think this is the last time I'll be having this discussion on this show.
Nah.
Like, I was trying to make a list of things I wanted to squeeze in because I was like, there's so much to talk about mental health. So I think that I know you're writing another show. We don't have to touch on it too much, but I want to. We have in another minute. I want to start another one of Josh Garcia's songs. So maybe we'll have you come back later on in the summer. So
cool.
You know, look up Garage. Garbage, a story. You can find it on Facebook.com. What Would Save the World? You can find information. All this stuff we're talking about. I'm going to be posting about CBT. I'm going to post about Al-Anon.
Al-Anon, Alateen, all that good shit.
Yeah, all that stuff. So we're going to be posting all about that. So I'm going to be playing another Josh Garcia song. You can find his stuff on Josh Garcia Music at SoundCloud or on Bandcamp. There's only two songs on Bandcamp, but they're the songs I'm playing. So if you specifically like those, you check those out. And, you know, me and Megan both work for Horse Trade Theater Company. If you want to look that up, that's where Garbage was performed. And there's a lot of really interesting shows there. There's been some stuff with, like, theater, prison stuff. So that's all really relevant.
Come see us at Horse Trade under St. Mark's in the Crane. We have a lot of great things happening.
Yeah, so we got to rep that show, especially because Ereziv, our boss, is, like, one of the coolest people in the East Village. No, like, really, like, that is, like, one of the last havens of, like, East Village magic.
Because,
like, you know, obviously we're in a bike shop basement in Brooklyn, which is cool in Bushwick, but, like, you know, the East Village, like, don't do that shit anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, Erez really does. So anyway, so What Would Save the World? I'm on Wednesdays from 3 to 4 p.m. and Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m. So if anybody ever wants to be on my show, you think you have something you could talk about on here, you can email me at tukeedalow, that's the number 2, the symbol, kedalow@gmail.com. You can also follow that same thing on Instagram and Twitter. All right, thank you so much for tuning in. I feel like this is a really important episode. If anybody, you know, has any thoughts on this, please tell me. I could read it on the next show. I want to hear about it. So now we're going to put on Josh Garcia. It's called Bruises. It's kind of interesting. I feel like it's, like, relevant to a lot of the abuse we're talking about. All right, Josh Garcia, thanks for listening to all of us, listening to us talk. All right, here we go.
Tell me, mama, how many tears you cried today. Tell me all the things you never had the heart to say. Tell me how you didn't have the strength to walk away. And I'll tell you that I love you. Tell me, mama, how many bruises can't be seen. Tell me all about the things he did and said he didn't mean. Tell me every time you had to choose to look the other way. And I'll tell you every time it's okay.
Oops, I did it again. I fucked up and I forgot that this...
Yeah.